You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Coming up tomorrow after 7 on The Morning Show, a look at whether businesses that will be starting or expanding due to the new Foxconn plant might be eligible for similar incentives and subsidies. First, a meeting held last Friday between South Korean President Moon Jae-in and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has many feeling optimistic about the prospect of North Korea giving up its nuclear weapons and an official end to the Korean War. Here's President Trump speaking earlier this week.
The United States has never been closer to potentially having something happen with respect to the Korean Peninsula that can get rid of the nuclear weapons, can create so many good things, so many positive things, and peace and safety for the world. So we'll see what happens.
President Trump is being praised by some for his role in making that summit a reality, and the president continues to say that a meeting between himself and the leader of North Korea might not be far off. Andrew Kidd is a professor of political science at UW-Madison. He joins us here in the studio. Andrew, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, let's start first with what the leaders of North and South Korea actually agreed to at this summit. What did they come out of their being in common on?
Well, they had a number of things that they agreed on. They agreed to work towards the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, i.e. getting rid of the nuclear weapons. And they agreed on a few other things related to peace between North and South Korea, working towards a peace treaty between North and South Korea to end the Korean War from 1950 to 53, and a few other less but somewhat symbolic aspects, working towards economic cooperation, reopening some of the economic ventures that used to be involving South Korean investment in North Korea to employ North Korean workers, things like that.
And often when there have been some openings in the past, there has also been a move for trying to reunify families that were divided
yes.
by the conflict. Is that also part of this?
That's another part, yeah. Increasing family visits, yes, mm-hmm. so that families can get together.
Have there been pledges like this before that have not turned out to be fulfilled in the long run?
Many times. So starting in the early 90s, the very end of the Cold War, North and South Korea had an agreement to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. At that point, North Korea did not have nuclear weapons. So it was really the United States nuclear weapons that were in South Korea were the only nuclear weapons there. And we actually withdrew our nuclear weapons from South Korea. And so for a while, nobody had nuclear weapons mm-hmm. there. But the North Koreans clandestinely pursued a nuclear weapons building program, which we found out about later in 1994. There was a big crisis. We negotiated a deal to freeze that program. Turned out they were developing another program even after that, clandestinely. And then there were a bunch of negotiations in the 2000s under the Bush years, where at various points in 2005 and 2007, we thought we had secured an agreement by the North Koreans to abandon their nuclear weapons program, only to be surprised subsequently by a nuclear test or a missile test that indicated that they were actually still working on the program.
It seems like the Winter Olympics that happened in South Korea just a few months ago really created an interesting opportunity, and there was contact between the North and the South that had really not happened before. The North sent not only athletes, but kind of an official envoy, including Kim Jong-un's sister, I believe mm-hmm. it was. Was that kind of the start of this warming up that allowed for this summit to happen?
In a sense, that is about the point at which Kim Jong-un apparently decided to embark on this diplomatic tack, where he would try to warm up relations with South Korea, reduce the tension there, make concessions, make overtures, and pursue that negotiating tactic. That's probably when that started, yes.
And what does Kim Jong-un have to gain from these talks and possibly abandoning his country's nuclear weapons, as he suggested?
Well, those are two slightly different questions. What he has to gain here by opening up to the South, by trying to get the South interested in cooperation, the South has always been interested in cooperation. It's really been the North that's been opposed to it over the years. But what he wants is to, I think, get out from under what he perceives possibly correctly as a threat from the United States to use military force against his nuclear weapons program, Trump came into office very hostile towards North Korea. He surrounded himself with people like Pompeo and John Bolton, who are extremely hostile towards North Korea and think the North Korean nuclear weapons program is a direct threat to the United States. And the North Koreans have recently tested an ICBM capable of hitting the United States. And so people are worried that for the first time, it's not just a Korean problem. They could actually hit the U.S. with a nuclear weapon. And so there's been a lot of talk of preventive war on the part of the United States attacking North Korean nuclear facilities. And I think the North Koreans are spooked by that. I think they think that in Trump, they might be up against somebody who might actually be willing to use force against their nuclear weapons program. So they are taking a diplomatic tack to propose negotiations both with Trump and to pursue negotiations first with the South Koreans to try to generate this peace momentum that will make it very difficult for Trump subsequently, if he becomes dissatisfied with whatever the deal is offered or emerges at their summit, to return to a confrontational tactic and possibly even military force.
We're talking with Andrew Kidd. He's a professor of political science at UW-Madison, and we're talking about the recent summit between the leaders of North and South Korea. Now, you have to wonder about how stable or secure Kim Jong-un feels his regime is, if he's willing to kind of, you know, take what could be a big risk in these talks. Do we know? I mean, we've heard for years about how there's famine and the conditions for people in North Korea are pretty horrific. Do we have a sense of how secure he feels in his position?
I think he feels relatively secure, at least over the course of the few years that he's been in power. He's much more secure than he ever has been. Early on, people thought he would be probably overthrown, a fairly weak leader. He didn't have a lot of time to prepare for his role, but he managed to solidify power. He has killed a number of potential threats to his power, including relatives of his own uncle, his own half-brother, who was killed at an airport in Thailand. So he has managed to consolidate power pretty strongly as far as his control of the regime is concerned. And then as far as the security of the North Korean regime, it's also relatively strong these days in the sense that it's come away since the famine of the 90s, right? People aren't really starving to death in large numbers in the countryside anymore. The economy is extremely poor by Western standards, certainly by South Korean standards. But he's not facing a popular uprising or rebellion from the population's point of view either. So he's relatively secure as a North Korean leader. That said, the whole North Korean regime is itself in some way structurally insecure because it's so glaringly worse than South Korea that if the population of North Korea as a whole were to eventually find out how poor they are relative to the South, that could lead to serious problems domestically for the North Koreans, which is one reason why they have maintained as tight an information embargo as they can possibly maintain against any information coming in from South Korea.
So what do we know about how the North Korean press, and the North Korean press being the government, how they're presenting this to the North Korean people?
Yeah, they're not presenting it that much. They don't broadcast it anywhere nearly as much as it gets broadcast in South Korea. An interesting aspect is that, so the North Korean media is, as you say, strictly an organ of the state propaganda. And it has been vitriolic in the past against Trump, against South Korea, against Japan. And it's toned it down a lot. It's not exactly positive or chummy, but it's toned it down a lot. And the level of propaganda is sort of somewhat less. The coverage of the Olympics, for instance, was positive, not a lot of it. You didn't see it like day-to-day coverage like you would see in the United States or South Korea, but you saw some. So, you know, by North Korean standards, that's really like, you know, that's like a charm offensive. It's still not exactly. And an interesting aspect is that he went public, Kim Jong-un went public with this peace offensive within his own country, which previously he used to maintain the sort of harsh line domestically while extending diplomatic feelers. But now he's actually said to his own people that he would suspend the nuclear testing program, for instance, which is unprecedented.
Andrew Kidd is a professor of political science at UW-Madison. We're talking about where things stand after a recent meeting between the leaders of North and South Korea. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. After the inter-Korean summit, are you optimistic that North Korea will give up its nuclear weapons? Do you think President Trump deserves credit for making the summit happen? And as we move closer to a possible meeting between President Trump and Kim Jong-un, what do you think the U.S. should be demanding from North Korea? Let us know at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation in just a bit here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We're continuing our talk with Andrew Kidd, professor of political science at UW-Madison, about the recent meetings between the leaders of North and South Korea. And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. How important do you think President Trump's role was in making the inter-Korean summit happen? Do you think Kim Jong-un is serious about pledging to abandon North Korea's nuclear program? What should we, perhaps, as a nation offer in return? And what are you hoping for from a possible meeting between North Korea and the U.S.? Is such a meeting a good idea? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@WPR.org. President Trump has been talking about his role in making this summit happen. Here he is at a rally in Michigan over the weekend.
One of the fake news groups this morning. Now, they were saying, what do you think President Trump had to do with it? I'll tell you what. Like, how about everything?
So, Andrew, do these talks between the North and South happen without President Trump's rhetoric over the last year?
I think probably not. I think that, for better or worse, Trump is correct in that his role in directly and indirectly threatening North Korea with military force is an essential component of why this is happening now. And the reason he's doing that is because of the ICBM threat to the United States.
Or intercontinental ballistic missiles.
Yes, intercontinental ballistic missiles that could hit the United States. That's at least why he has support among the more hawkish elements of the foreign policy community. So, yeah, I think the U.S. threat of military force is a big factor in why North Korea is suddenly very interested in negotiating. On the other hand, we should point out that so far they haven't really given up anything. And the things that they are asking for and discussing, like the peace treaty, are things that they've wanted all along. Mm. They've always wanted a peace treaty because they hope that that would get the United States off the Korean Peninsula, which has been their goal since 1953.
Some observers, including South Korean President Moon Jae-in, have said that if negotiations continue to be successful and continue to advance, that President Trump should win the Nobel Peace Prize. Is that likely?
Probably not. I don't think the Nobel Committee is going to be just in general, kindly disposed towards Trump for a whole variety of factors. If this was to achieve some sort of spectacular deal, my guess is that the prize would go to the South Korean president, possibly the North Korean, although I seriously doubt that given his role in assassinating his own relatives, and probably not to Trump either.
Hmm. Let's go to the phones at 800-642-1234, and Will in Eau Claire is up. Hi, Will.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
A couple of hi. Thanks for the show. It's the popular topic right now. A couple quick thoughts here. I think we need to be careful and look at this interaction from the perspective of what North Korea specifically Kim Jong-un is going to get out of it. You know, the perpetuation of that regime seems to be tantamount. You know, 70 years of his family rule, that's critical to continue, I think, for him. Secondly, what is he going to get? Well, maybe the removal of 27,000 American troops, a lot more latitude to, get into mischief with a peace treaty in place in which, we, you know, the world is happily anticipating concessions. I think there's a dark side to this we need to be careful with.
All right. Thanks for that call, Will. And Andrew Kidd, I think one of the interesting things is when you start a process like this, and I'm thinking back to the transition from the Soviet Union to Russia and the former republics of the Soviet Union, is once you start a process, you can't necessarily control it. And as you were saying, as North Korean citizens start to learn more about the world, not just beyond their border in South Korea, but the rest of the world, that could start a process that Kim Jong-un is really not able to kind of put the genie back in the bottle on.
That's the danger from his perspective. I think Will identified the things that Kim Jong-un wants out of this, namely getting the Americans out of Korea, getting a peace deal with the South Koreans, but he doesn't, and perpetuating the rule of himself and his family in North Korea, keeping that regime going. But the big danger for him is if there's too much peace on the Korean Peninsula and too much information starts seeping northwards to the North Koreans about what life is really like in the South, then that could greatly destabilize his regime, which is why all along the North Koreans have pursued this hostile policy towards South Korea, trying to minimize contact, control it very carefully. So, yeah, I think this tack towards the South, the whole peace offensive, is designed to try to prevent an American military strike. But it has dangers from the Kim Jong-un North Korean perspective as well, that it could lead to this process which gets out of hand from his point of view.
Thanks for that call, Will. Let's go back to the phones, and Gregory in La Crosse is up. Hi, Gregory.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What would you like to share?
Well, I totally agree. I think that, well, the two questions you asked, I want to address them, is that I believe that President Trump played a crucial key in the summit talks. I really believe, truly, that they would not have happened if President Trump would have pushed it. But, and then on the other hand, can North Korea be trusted? Going forward, I would like to be optimistic, but I have to be a realist also, is that they have never, I think, if I'm correct, 100% of their promises they have not followed through on. And I agree with your guest that he wants to keep his family in rule and to suppress information and to suppress what's going on so that the North Koreans don't know what really is going on is crucial to his holding his regime.
Thanks for that call, Gregory. And I guess Gregory's comments made me think of this, Andrew. Who's really in the driver's seat here? Who's keeping the communications going? Who's kind of in the power position?
Well, both sides are vying for that. Both sides are trying to do the best they can, given the cards they've been dealt with. So I'm not sure one side is in charge in any sort of broader sense. Kim Jong-un has been taking most of the initiatives here. But again, within the broader context of Trump threatening military force against North Korea, so not necessarily an enviable position to be in. I mean, the comment about whether we can trust the North Koreans, I think, is definitely spot on, right? There's many, many cases where the North Koreans reneged on deals or seeming deals that they had struck with the United States or South Korea. But there's a broader problem also, which is, can the North Koreans trust us? And there may actually be reasons for them not to trust us. And this is gets back to the issue of what if the North Koreans actually did give up their nuclear weapons, would we then use force against them anyway in some subsequent crisis? And people are making a lot of reference to the Libyan case where Gaddafi gave up his nuclear weapons program only to be overthrown with the help of NATO forces in 2011. And the National Security Advisor, John Bolton, has openly said this is a great model to follow, but it's obviously not such a great model from Kim Jong-un's perspective.
Interesting analogy there. One thing that I've found myself wondering about is that China has been seen, up until this kind of current moment, China has been seen as the country that has the most influence with North Korea. Often when there have been conflicts with North Korea, China has been called in as kind of, you know, the broker, the ones to get North Koreans to the table or to be kind of an intermediary. It seems to me in this current situation that China actually has a fair amount of influence in that area to lose in this process.
Yeah, the role of China is very important, to be sure. And there's some interesting new developments there in the sense that China used to be a real backer of the North Korean regime, but they have become incredibly dissatisfied with Kim Jong-un over the past several years. And it's now to the point where people speculate that if there were to be a second Korean War, the Chinese would intervene, all right, but they wouldn't intervene to support Kim Jong-un. They would simply intervene to take over the territory and secure the nuclear weapons. So that's another new development that Kim Jong-un is facing, that you've got a threat from the United States, but you also have much less support from China and possibly even a military threat from China if he doesn't change his behavior. Now, China also, of course, wants to maintain influence on the Korean Peninsula, and they would also love the Americans to leave, which suggests the possibility of a sort of broader bargain, which might appeal to someone like Trump, who thinks big in these cases, of explicitly trading an American departure from the Korean Peninsula for some sort of unification of North and South Korea, which the Chinese are apparently now amenable to, which would solve the problem once and for all by getting rid of the North Korean regime. And you'd obviously have to get Kim Jong-un some asylum somewhere so he doesn't personally fear getting killed. But some sort of big outcome like that might be something that they are pursuing.
And as we wrap up, Andrew, one of the things that seems to probably be hinging on whether these talks between the North and South advance is that possibility, that carrot that's kind of being dangled out there, that Kim Jong-un might have a one-on-one meeting with President Trump. How invested do you think Kim Jong-un is in making sure that that does happen?
I think he very much wants it to happen at this point. I was initially skeptical that he did, but now it seems pretty clear that he does. And there are some obvious reasons why he would, because he gets additional legitimacy. No North Korean leader ever met with an American president before. So for him, it's a big plus. And he hasn't actually conceded anything yet, really. I mean, he's talked about some things, but hasn't actually made any concessions yet. So for him, it's a big diplomatic coup. We'll see how much he has to pay for it later on.
Well, Andrew Kidd, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Andrew Kidd is a professor of political science at UW-Madison. He was with us to talk about the recent inter-Korean summit and what it means for a possible meeting between President Trump and Kim Jong-un. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. You're listening to Central Time.